Let's go to the phone line where we've got Colorado State Senator District Number 7, Ray Scott, on the line with us. That's the Grand Junction area. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Now, which part? No, it's Grand Junction. Are you outside of there? Do you go to Frutia and Rifle and all that good stuff too?
Well, Mesa County is the county that I represent, which is pretty much Grand Junction, Frutia, Palisade, Colorado. We have about 150,000 people in a district. So that's kind of encompasses just one county over there, Mesa County.
And about 150 national parks, too.
Yeah, it seems like it, doesn't it? I mean, we are like the national park for the country.
That's the one thing I remember is right when you drive through that mountain on, is it I-70 that runs across the? Okay, so you drive. You drive through the mountain, and that's when you start hitting, you know, Vail, Aspen, Rifle, that sort of thing.
Yep.
I just, it seems like every other sign is a national park sign. Just
we are blessed with a whole lot of those. It's a beautiful state. There's no question.
Is it Hanging Fish Lake? Is that the name of it?
It's called Hanging Lake. It's in Glenwood Canyon.
Okay. Yeah, that's gorgeous. Oh.
That's just awesome,
man. All right. Well, I'll get out of my daydreaming now. And now I'm thinking about having a nice little sack lunch by the river going through Rifle at this time. That's another nice place to stop off and enjoy the outdoors. But let's talk about Grand Junction here and some of the, well, now you've got natural gas out there primarily, correct? There's no oil drilling?
Yeah. If you kind of look at Colorado, we've got the Rocky Mountains, as you know, that goes right pretty much down the center of the state of Colorado. Everything west of the Continental Divide is mostly natural gas. Everything east of the Continental Divide is oil and natural gas, of course. But
So
we have associated natural gas that comes off of oil on the eastern plains.
And then when you go north up into Wyoming, that's natural gas up there too in the Powder River. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, there's oil and natural gas up there also. Yeah.
Well, that's right. They've got some oil up there, too. That's right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and then, of course, you go to the east side in Weld County where Greeley, that's where the oil and gas activity is in Colorado. The BLM office, that is that in Grand Junction? Is that right? The national BLM office?
Yes, sir. Now, the Biden administration has curtailed that somewhat.
Oh,
they've made some changes since Biden took over. Hmm. There's still going to be a regional director there, but it won't be quite what we had hoped it would be.
Now, do they work with the EPA in Denver pretty closely, or is that outside of your pay grade and jurisdiction?
No, they do.
Okay.
They do.
Okay. Well, you know, on the other side of the state and the Rockies and the in between, who knows? I mean, who knows nowadays? I mean, I've got a brother that lives in the same town as me. I haven't seen him for 6 months.
Yeah.
It's,
well, you know, when you think about Colorado also, about 70% or more of our land west of the Continental Divide is federal land.
Oh.
When you go east back out towards Greeley that you were talking about, that's all private.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so that's of course why the Western Energy Alliance is so active with the federal land talks and that sort of thing. I saw Catherine Scama was testifying either today or tomorrow on behalf of the Western states, and so let's use that as a transition to get into what you were a part of today. Now you're actually in session in Colorado. It started January 12th, so we're about a little bit over a week in with the session, and today you actually had a oil and gas symposium. What was today all about?
Well, what happens here in Colorado is by statute, each agency has to come before the legislature and report on their activities. So yes, we had the opportunity to have Department of Natural Resources, which of course includes oil and gas, they came in and testified on their activities over the last year or so, and what they look forward to in the future.
What do they testify on? When I think of, you know, what the industry promotes, it's the taxes, it's the jobs. And when I think of what the opposition And I do say opposition because the governor has said war on oil and gas, which is, that's an interesting rhetoric statement to make for a governor when a lot of the taxes and a lot of the jobs and a lot of the humanity is oil and gas. But like I said, the opposition, they're very much firing bullets and daggers and that sort of thing. What does this government agency or this representative, what kind of stuff do they report to you?
Well, basically, they talk to us about revenue.
Okay.
They talk to us about a lot of the regulations they're trying to put in place.
Okay.
They've been doing rulemaking here in Colorado since what was called Senate Bill 181 was passed a couple years ago. So that has really been a lot of rulemaking. And you've probably heard this before, that Colorado has the toughest oil and gas regulations in the country. And, of course, under this administration, of course, there's much more that they want to do because, in their mind, oil and gas can kind of go away and unreliable energy sources like wind and solar can take its place. Well, you and I know that's ridiculous. It's not going to happen. And it's a lot of political posturing, quite frankly, for the electorate out there. They're pandering for votes for their next cycle in November of this year. So, we get an opportunity to ask questions, which we do, to try to understand just what's happening with the oil and gas industry. And there was some pretty alarming statistics that came out of this. What we call a Form 2A, which is basically a drilling permit application. Just to put it into perspective for you and your listeners out there, Colorado had 447 permits approved in 2018. I asked how many have we approved in 2021, and it took a while for them to answer, but they finally answered 10. That would be 10. Our data actually shows that they've only approved 5. So you go from that level of activity to where we are today, and it's very damning for the oil and gas industry.
How does that ripple into other industries? We're talking about in North Dakota. I've been very vocal about how, they kind of put their eggs into one basket. Somewhere 55-60% of the state general fund budget was dedicated to the two oil and gas taxes. And I know Colorado, there's a lot of businesses downtown Denver.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it does have a very far-reaching impact. There's absolutely no question about that.
Does that come up during these sessions at all? Do they bring up what the educational economic impact would be or anything like that?
Well, what's funny is we actually bring it up because we want to talk about those things, right?
Because you guys are doing your job, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. And our opposition is talking about climate change and how wonderful and the nirvana we're going to live in.
Yeah.
When states around us are doing, the oil and gas industry does a great job of policing itself on the environment. I can tell you this, in Colorado, we've lost close to 10,000 jobs in a couple of years, which, that equates into about $300 million in revenues. So and that affects everything. Schools, that affects fires, special districts. It affects hospital funding, sewer and water funding. It's caused a lot of trouble here. And you brought up the land trust, which, as you go back, Congress or Thomas Jefferson actually set that up when we became states out here. Now, I don't know about North Dakota. I'd have to look at the percentages, but down here, only 12% of the trust lands are actually producing. Well, I don't know if that's enough to feed what K-12 education really needs. And I think over time, that's going to cause some problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. I think there's, and what I found about government, and you're a government employee, a state senator, if you will, there's not a lot of cuts that get done. So when the budget gets up there, and all of a sudden if the revenue gets dropped, they'll just raise taxes. I mean,
the only thing that saved, I think, a lot of states is the federal stimulus money that came in.
Sure.
Yeah. And they're relying on that still, which I think is a dangerous proposition.
Has that been inflating any of the budgets or projections or anything along those lines? Because I know some private businesses are apparently keeping that you know, government gravy train into their pro forma going into the upcoming years to go get investments and stuff. I don't know if that's legal or what, but I've seen it. So, like I said, that's in the private sector. I don't know how your Office of Budget Management works, but do they look at that kind of stuff? Like, yeah, we're going to get that $1 billion from the feds this next year because of Omicron and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a real problem because, you know, we basically are awash with money. We really were. We still have somewhere around $4 billion from the federal stimulus that we don't even know where the hell to spend it, quite frankly. And the problem is what happens is the other side of the aisle will go out and set up new government programs or new government agencies. Now, the big problem is once that stimulus money is gone, who's going to pay for it? Well, the taxpayers have to pick up the tab at that point. So it all sounds warm and fuzzy that, oh, we've got this new office of whatever it might be, but you set up a $5 or $6 million budget. Once the stimulus money's gone, the taxpayers are stuck with the cap. And that's been the big struggle we've had here in Colorado is trying to say, okay, if we're going to have that kind of input, you know, you're right. Maybe that needs to be some kind of a reserve fund for the future. But we haven't had that experience here. The Democrats continue to set up more government agencies, more government spending. And those chickens are going to come home to roost down the road.
Do you guys have a rainy day fund set aside by the legislature? Because, you know, tourism, if it drops, or, you know, the governor decides to wage a war on oil and gas and those 10,000 jobs disappear. I mean, do you guys have, we do in North Dakota, we've got a rainy day fund.
Yes, we do. I don't believe it's near enough to cover the problems that we're going to develop.
Yeah.
Just to give you an example how crazy it is here, an Office of Just Transition was established a couple years ago.
That sounds really made up. What is that?
It's a crazy program. So if you lost your oil and gas job, the Office of Just Transition is supposed to help you be retrained to do something else. Well, you know, and that goes, keep in mind, we're shutting down coal mines, plus the oil and gas sector. And as you know, you've been around a lot of these workers. This is what they've done for 20 years. You know, they don't want to be a computer code guy or a carpet shampooer or whatever that next career might be. They're used to knocking down $100,000 a year, and they can't replace those wages. So what we're seeing is a lot of just transition right out of the state of Colorado. These guys are going to work in Texas, North Dakota, Wyoming, wherever they can go to find a job. But as you know, the states around Colorado, their drilling activity has picked up.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost 10,000 jobs. I believe Texas has picked up 2,500 jobs. So there's a huge change in what's happening out here. And it's going to be damaging over the next few years.
That's one of the most ridiculous names I've ever heard. Just Transition Department or agency or what was it?
They set up a department for the Office of Just Transition.
And
because the government took their job away from you, now they're going to figure out a way to get you something else.
And how many employees does this government agency have taking away jobs from people?
Exactly. That's the problem is, we have more taking away the jobs than we do have trying to help somebody find a job.
Oh, we've got to get we'd be at that tipping point where we've got more government employees than we do private, right?
in Colorado, the fastest growing job supplier in Colorado is the government.
When you think about the quasi-government agencies that are only in existence because they get 80 to 90 to 100% government money to operate, I'd like to see the numbers of how many government tax employees go in back into taxes, how many double taxes it takes to keep the cycle going and everything along those lines. Yeah, it's just a weird exercise. Anyways, well, let's get back to the state of Colorado, SB 181, the oil and gas report, I guess, that the natural resources department gave to you guys today. The other thing I wanted to ask, you guys asked questions. At this point, I mentioned Kathleen Scama earlier is going to be testifying somewhere in D.C. Via Zoom or Teams or whatever they use. At this point in your process with the legislative session starting on the 12th, can lobbyists or organizations ask questions to this department head, or is it just the elected officials at this point?
Oh, no, you know, definitely. It's wide open. I mean, as far as lobbying teams come in all the time and ask questions, there'll be hearings on different bills that may come forward. I don't know of anything yet, but there'll be something that the public certainly has the opportunity to come in and say their piece.
Was there anybody from the oil and gas industry there today drilling them or asking anything along those lines that stood out?
Well, no, they're not allowed to ask in this particular setting.
Okay.
But, you know, most people are still doing the Zoom-type calls in to watch what we're doing. But, yes, there were several oil and gas representatives online and in person.
Okay. I was wondering if, do you know what they were asking, what their comments were? But I suppose if they were watching, they didn't say anything. So they don't have the ability to, like, text in the side questions like a Facebook Live or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
Put emojis in there and all that different fun stuff?
No.
Just a bunch of frowny faces.
Exactly.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, any other, at this point, anything to note, anything to report? You guys have been in session now for about 8 days. I was looking through just some of the things you guys were talking about. Looks like a lot of lifestyle issues already, huh?
Well, yeah, exactly. There's a lot of social engineering, all those types of things that are going on. You know, and it's what people see with a centralized government. When you have one party that's in control of a state, or the federal government for that matter right now, the majority party can pretty much have their way with what they want to do. And we have to run, you know, opposition where we can, get things amended and turn the best we possibly can for the people who we represent. And it's a tall order, but you do the best you can.
What are your people out in Mesa County, out there in Grand Junction and Frutia? What types of folks are they when it comes to the environment and energy and farming and oil and gas and agriculture and all that?
We have a really good mix. We really do have a good mix. And everybody has become, you know, we're in a different paradigm now with the pandemic economy that we've had to deal with. We're still experiencing some good growth, even though we've had some issues on the energy sector. I think people are hopeful. I think they understand that, yes, we're in a little bit of a transition here. It's unfortunate that the one side tries to paint the other as, you know, climate deniers and all those crazy terminology. Well, that's not really the case. I've never met anybody in the energy sector that's anti-environment. You know, we all believe in clean water, clean air. We all have kids and grandkids and pets and animals, and we're all trying to do the right thing. But to try to villainize one side or the other is just not appropriate. And we're a changing society. We've had a huge paradigm shift in the last two years. And we'll adjust, and technology moves forward. There's new things happening all the time, especially in the energy sector. And we still have to stay with that all-of-the-above approach that we believe in, and not close our eyes to any new technology. As you know, in Wyoming, Jeff Bezos and Microsoft, Bill Gates are doing the nuclear project up there. Never thought I would see those two involved in something like that. But you got to give them credit. They're smart enough to see the future, right? We need to develop all these forms of energy and not try to make something go away rapidly, because it's not going to work. It's not going to help.
Should mention, too, that they did get $860 or $680 million of government money to do that, too. So there was.
Yeah, I applied for that also, but I didn't.
Oh, did you? You got beat out by Bill Gates, huh?
Yeah, somehow Bezos and Gates just edged me right out of that program. I was like, darn it.
That's a better story than what I have. I sat in the mayor of Fargo's seats one day at the Fargo Fever game.
hilarious.
I got escorted out by the mayor of Fargo. Oh, well. Hey, what the heck?
God.
Oh boy. I should probably get a kind of a specific update on SB 181. You mentioned that there was a little bit of discussion today. Now, just give us a kind of a quick 30-second history, and then are they rolling out new regulations this year? Is that kind of the idea?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Senate Bill 181 was an absolute complete overhaul of every single regulation that we had in the state of Colorado. Everything. So it's always interesting for me because it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on, you think you can pass a piece of legislation and, well, we're done. Well, passing a piece of legislation and implementing the policy is two different things. So they're a couple of years down the road, they're not even close. It's a massive undertaking, as you can well imagine. Just think of your state. If they said, oh, we're going to completely redo all of our regulations, it takes forever to get that accomplished. And especially if you've got a group of people, as you said earlier, that are very much anti-oil and gas, you can imagine what these regulations look like. Right now, the calculation is it's costing the industry about $300 million more to produce energy in Colorado because of these new regulations. It's draconian. It's very heavy-handed, and it can't sustain itself into the future, is my opinion. And you know, I always tell people too that policies are only as good as the next election, right? So we'll see what happens in November of 2022, because everything that's been put in place can be undone with one election, right? And who knows? We just never know.
Yeah, it almost seems like it's just polarizing effects on the economy, too. I've never seen anything like it. But, you know, I mean, who knows? I've only lived this life, so that's could have been happening back in the Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson's days, too. Who knows? Okay. You mentioned something that sparked one final question before we let you get on with your day. I appreciate the time today. I know you're under the weather and doing the Zoom meeting, not being in Denver. Are you guys even having session, or is everybody on Zoom?
Oh, no, it's a mix.
It is a mix. All right.
Healthy ones are there. The sick ones are Zoom. That's how we're doing.
One of the stories we started doing at the end of last year, following it into the beginning of this year, were some of the federal regulations coming in with methane restrictions and just really impacting a lot of stripper wells in small independent companies. Does that ever get discussed at these meetings with federal regulations? Does the state director, does he relay these federal regulations, or is that like a whole separate session?
Absolutely. It's all a part of everything that's discussed, right? Yeah, so we're dealing with the methane rules. We're dealing with everything from any kind of a spill on a well pad. You know, you name it. There's all kinds of regulations out there.
Yeah.
And they just keep rewriting them and making stricter and more strict. And, of course, as you know, when you do those types of things, you kind of compress the entire industry, right? So the small players are selling off to the big companies. So we're kind of having that circular motion that we see every once in a while in the industry where, you know, the big ones take over the little ones, and then someday they decide to divest again, and you have a bunch of wildcatters out there again working like they used to. So we're in a strange transition right now. I told somebody the other day, it's kind of like going down the road and you're in drive and you bump the stick shift and knock it in neutral and you keep accelerating and nothing's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, realize that you kicked it out of drive. You know, that's kind of that kind of a feeling that we're just stuck in neutral.
What's interesting about that analogy and why I believe it's very accurate is because somebody else bumped it in neutral. It wasn't you.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone else bumped it in neutral. And what that allowed is it allowed the people who had the engine not bumped in neutral to keep moving ahead and the rest of the world to catch up to you.
Exactly.
And that is a great analogy, actually, because there are some that did not get bumped into neutral, and they get to keep going forward. In fact, some people got a NOS, got a turbocharge, man. You saw those new numbers where like 80% of the first round of the PPP money never went to the employees. A bunch of Monty Burns business owners just sat back and threw it on their pile. You know, I mean, so those people got the NOS. They got the turbocharge. A lot of the small business owners, I'm finding out more and more of the individual sole proprietor, those are the ones that got left out in the crowd, because what ended up happening is they had to go on welfare or nothing. And by the way, I say welfare because the $400 or $600 from the government, that was welfare. we just called it a new name. It's not food stamps, it's SNAP cards. And so,
but it is a private company. You know, the owner only has his assets. It's not like he's
right.
You know, in a position like an employee gets a paycheck, the owner has to sit there and wait, and then maybe someday, you know, he gets to sell his assets to another company and make his investment back.
Mm-hmm.
The private individuals out there, you're exactly right, took a heck of a hit.
It really did. You know, a lot of the bigger companies were okay. A lot of the guys that had a lot of debt got taken care of because it was in the bank's best interest, of course, to, you know, not have their biggest debt people go under. And I mean, I get all the logic. I'm not happy with the end result, and the justification doesn't mean I don't get it. But I do think that analogy that you gave was really good. And even the little add-on that I did. And then the other part of that too is I keep telling people, you know, as much as the guys in the bars are bitter and everybody's, you know, bragging on social media how much money they're spending, all this other thing, keep in mind, they did just print $7.5 trillion more dollars. So go get it.
Oh yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, we got to go get it. If we got to go and, you know, sign a few more papers to have the government give it to us, I guess for a while, that's what we got to do. But, anywho, well, okay. So we've got SB 181. We got federal regulations. We got governor with a war on oil and gas. Have we got any good news in Colorado coming out of the oil and gas sector?
Well, you know, I think these are amazing people. They're very resilient. You know, we've had some companies that have merged together. You know, they're cleaning up their balance sheets. They're running very lean and mean. And thank God for $88 barrels of oil and $4 gas, right?
Yeah.
They're able to kind of recover some of the losses that they've had. But they're having to live on those production numbers right now. They can't drill for new resources at the moment. Is that sustainable? I don't know. It depends on, you know, the price is going to be volatile, I'm sure, going through the rest of this year, depending on OPEC and federal policy and who knows what else could happen out there. But I don't know that I've ever seen a more creative bunch of human beings than the energy sector. These people are smart. They know how to adjust. And that God knows they've been tested over the last few years. And, you know, you kind of have to say you're very proud of them because, boy, they've taken it on the chin in a lot of different ways, and they keep coming back. They just keep coming back. You can't keep them down.
We always call them smart, clever capitalists. You know, some smart, clever capitalists out there is going to figure out how to mine Bitcoin and capture that natural gas and do all these and they're even crazy. I mean, you got to be crazy to be out there sleeping next to a well site checking Bitcoin levels every hour, you know, that sort of thing. That's takes a real special breed, and that's my kind of people, by the way. One thing I do like to mention to people is that, you know, at the end of the day, the oil and gas industry is not going to go anywhere in my lifetime, and probably not my kid's lifetime either. But that doesn't mean the companies are not going to evolve and change. You're probably going to see more energy companies. You might even see, you know, the gas pump might go away in my lifetime and be changed with a energy plug-in that's maybe powered by gas, that's maybe powered by hydrogen, that's maybe powered by nuclear. But the pump will be a little bit more of a plug-in that'll be more universal. I think that's going to happen regardless. And then if, like in Australia right now, they have electric charging stations that are being charged by diesel power. So, that's like the future, you know, that's that. And I get that. I get all that. Think about, you know, lamps. If we had 5 different plug-ins for lamps, nobody would have lamps. And so we got to have one universal plug-in. So I get all that, but where I'm going is natural gas. is uh-huh. is the crude oil is going to, you know, go through its changes and everything, but the product itself ain't going anywhere. Natural gas, I think, is going to come back once again. I see in France they're calling it renewable now. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So absolutely. Mesa County is a huge natural gas. You take a look at the federal government putting the BLM in there. That means there's federal jobs. Boy, your county really is looking like it's got a bright future, man.
Well, and I can tell you, you know, if we could ever, and I think somewhere in the future, I don't know where it is, if we could ever start to export some of these captured resources that we have, and as you mentioned, the Energy Alliance or the Western Energy Alliance, they're working very hard. You know, we tried on Coos Bay, Oregon. That's not looking good anymore. But I think they have some other ideas on how to get exports down to Baja, Mexico. And, you know, you saw the stories about Europe and how we moved ships going from wherever they were heading, and we diverted them to Europe to pull them out of a terrible situation. I mean, I sat back and thought, can you imagine if we weren't exporting any LNG, where those people would be today? Because they were in big trouble, and we were able to save them from a country that doesn't like us very much, the Soviet Union.
You know, if that would have been 100 years ago, that we'd have read about that in history class.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that type of alliance and help and just, you know, just shipping gas and energy across the sea like that, that's like what they did during wartime.
That's fantastic. I mean, that shows you where the technology has taken us. And you know, you always kind of put that last kind of spin on this whole thing. You know, it's a human problem, right? We know there's over a billion people out there that are scraping around the deserts of North Africa looking for sticks to burn. They don't have any electricity whatsoever. And we have an obligation to human beings to provide them with some relief in some way. And it's really easy to talk about them because they're not anywhere close to us. They're thousands of miles away. But it's real. And it's something we always have to keep in the back of our mind, is we are helping humanity. We're not just helping a company or a person. But if we can move this resource to help those people, that's an amazing thing. That's why we're on this planet, right?
Ray Scott, Senator from Colorado, Republican as well. He's I think that's the first time I think I've ever mentioned that. District 7, are you up for election? I imagine you're not up for another year or two, huh?
Well, I'm what's called a free agent because we have term limits in Colorado.
Oh!
So I'm a free agent. I'm now on the open market trying to find my next big adventure, and I hope I land something fairly soon so I can move on with the rest of my life.
Well, here I thought maybe, you know, that you were not up for re-election for a few years because I can always tell when someone speaks a little more freely. That either they're not up for re-election or their term limits are running out. I didn't realize you had term limits, so that makes total sense.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. So I keep telling people I'm a free agent. If somebody wants to be my agent, knock themselves out, right?
I'll never forget when a friend of mine, a newspaper reporter, called me after U.S. Senator Byron Dorgan finished his, whatever, 30-year term or whatever he had in North Dakota.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. Mr. PC, Mr. Always Smiling, never a hair out of place, that type of thing, and get a call from the newspaper reporter not even a week after Dorgan's out of office, and then he goes, hey, have you had Dorgan on yet? I go, no, and he goes, make sure, man, he's not holding back. He is ready to talk. He's just 30 years of just everything pressed up, you know. Just Earl Pomeroy, he was a U.S. House out of North Dakota, House of Representative for like 10, 15 years. And
yeah.
I tell you, that covering that guy for 10 years, I saw really quickly those U.S. House of Representatives, they never stop campaigning. They're just constantly campaigning because every 2 years there's an election.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I feel bad for him. Like when he lost, you know, you can see like this sign of relief, but. Well, anyway, it's a little business talk there, but I appreciate the time today, and you know, maybe I'll have you back before the session's over with another update.
Well, you know, I'm honored to be here. If I'm following Harold Hamm, I've done something right.
Well, I
do appreciate it.
I appreciate all the access and time you've given us and being a great wealth of information for the state of Colorado and a real good ambassador for the energy industry. And, hey, man, you know, free agent, when you're done, let's at least we can keep you on as a correspondent, if nothing else.
Sure, I'll send you a resume.
And a billa, too, I'm sure. So, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate the time today.
All right. Take care of yourself.